finfluencers, which are financial influencers on, let's say, YouTube, for example, who, you know, may talk about different stocks that people should buy. You know, we had the AMC frenzy, the GameStop frenzy. We had certain other types of assets like Bitcoin and a whole bunch of stuff when it comes to coins and that kind of stuff. And people, you know, listen to this and they take what we call investment advice from this, which is not what they should be doing.
Hello and welcome to World Finance, the podcast discussing all things finance and finance related. It's your boy Peter, and I'm with my co-host, my bro Jax. How are you today?
Yes, Peter. I'm doing very well, man. I don't know about you, but it feels like we've had such a long winter here in the UK. But as we speak right now, where I'm shooting from, the sun is beaming my back, and I'm hoping this is the start of something new.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, man. I'm here just chilling over here with my little protein shake. I'm just chilling and observing the lovely weather outside, man. But I'm definitely in agreement with you right now, man. But as always, my bro, good to hear from you. Good to catch up with you. Good to chat as well. I'm looking forward to this episode, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too, man. Let's go. Let's go.
Come on, come on, come on. Shout out to our listeners wherever you are in the world, wherever you're listening to this on, and however you are listening to this on, we appreciate you and we recognize you, man. Today's episode is going to really be talking about where one is, where we are, wherever we are on our journey, and maybe just share some signs, I guess, on if you where depending on where you are, we're going to be talking a bit about signs that you are actually doing quite decent, quite well from a financial perspective. And Jax, I know this topic is quite subjective, right? Because everyone thinks they're not doing well, right? Everyone thinks they can do better. So how do you kind of, before we even go into the science, what's your discussion with someone that feels, yeah, okay, I'm doing okay, but I can do better?
Yeah, I think you know that there's nothing wrong with having that sort of mentality, you know, wanting to do better. I think there is a conversation to be had about being content, and knowing what that looks like. It is quite common for many people who may be doing very well financially, just on a relative perspective, relative to the rest of society, and they still don't feel very, you know, accomplished or very fulfilled because they have not reached a place of contentment and gratitude. So I think there is a conversation to be had there, generally speaking. And I think what's also important to note here is, you know, this episode is talking about, you know, 10 signs that you can look out for to actually say, hey, I'm actually doing pretty okay. I'm not doing as bad as I thought, because you know, you do find, especially now, here in the UK and across the world, actually, we have gone through some really tough times. And we are going through what we call a cost of living crisis here in the UK. So it is tough times. It is hard out here. It's not easy. And many people do feel financially strained. But I think this episode is a way for our listeners to also actually look at some of the things that they may take for granted to say, actually, I'm actually doing pretty okay financially. And chances are you may be on track to actually reaching some level of wealth and financial independence in the future.
Love that, love that, love that, man. Because I think it's so easy, Jax, to always look at ourselves or even compare ourselves to others. And, you know, we're very easy to say, oh, we're not doing that well. But no, we're gonna, this is a relative discussion. And this is based on generally what we see and what stats and studies show us as well. So hopefully these are some good signs. And as you said, we're going to be touching on 10 signs, you know, that one is doing well. So Jax, you want to kick it off with the first one?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first one is something you definitely have heard us speak about on a Walk Finance podcast. If you are new here, I'm sure you'll continue to hear us speak about it as well, is having a fully funded emergency fund, right? Different terminology. So I tend to call it a cash reserve. I think Peter, you often call it rainy day money. Other people call it an emergency fund. But essentially, this is an account, a fund that you have, a pot of money that you have as basically your first line of defense in case something goes wrong financially and you are required to fork out some money. So often people will say, you know, the number that you should be going for should be between 3 to 6 months worth of your monthly expenses. So if you spend, you know, £1,000 a month, In order to survive, then you need at least £3,000 for 3 months and £6,000 for 6 months. And essentially, what that means is, life happens. You may lose your job, may lose your first source of income, your main source of income, but you are able to look after yourself for at least a few months and before you get yourself back on your feet. And so the key thing is, yes, absolutely. We have seen the stats, and we know, generally speaking, that actually the average person struggles to have even just £1,000 saved. And I know, as you were saying, Peter, even earlier, a lot of the time, PLB, we compare ourselves to things that we even see on social media. And I don't know about you, but when I go on social media, it seems like everybody's doing amazingly well, right? So, it may be hard for you to understand that why does a stat say actually the majority of people don't even have £1,000 saved, but there's a lifestyle out there that's, shown on social media and other places that tells a different story. I think the key thing is to understand is most people are kind of financially struggling. And if you're able to get this kind of fully funded emergency fund in place, then you're actually doing pretty well for yourself.
Very well. As you said, Jackson's stats show that a lot of people don't have up to £1,000 in savings, and that is nowhere, well, for a lot of people, that is not close to a fully funded emergency fund. So if you do have that, fully funded emergency fund right there, you are actually doing very well. So yeah, big shout out to you. No, but no, Jax, that's really, really helpful. I think for me, actually, I was a little answer to do another one, but I was gonna say for me, I'll definitely say for anyone, another sign that you are doing well, or the second sign that we can talk about is for anyone that is not living paycheck to paycheck. Now, Jax, this can be quite misleading, this one, because usually I think when people hear that term, people think it just means okay, by the end of the month, when I've been paid at the beginning of the month, and then by the end of the month I have no money. And then sometimes people might think that is living paycheck to paycheck. Well, in a lot of cases that is the case. However, it's about what have you done with that money throughout the month. Have you purposely budgeted your money so that a lot of money goes towards savings, investing, goes towards your day-to-day living, so on that last day you might not have zero, but you have a little bit of money, but you budgeted where all of your spending is going. And I think that is slightly different to actually what paycheck to paycheck, which is really you've got this money. Let's say you've been paid £1,000. Your expenses for that month is exceeds way beyond £1,000. So by mid halfway through that month, you're really struggling and you don't know where you're going to make ends meet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you're really saying is people that just don't have a budget,
That's
right?
it.
They are
And stick to
poor.
that budget.
Yes,
Or able to stick to the budget, sorry.
absolutely, absolutely. So it comes down to really what we call capital allocation. There's a lack of planning. So it's essentially, living paycheck to paycheck, as you said, is not just, oh, I got paid and now everything's gone. That is definitely part of it, right? So if you get paid and everything goes away in one go, or towards your bills and stuff, then obviously that's something that we need to look at and something that we want to adjust so that we have more coming in than going out. But yes, it's much more than that. It's actually what's going out. What is it that's actually going out, right? And what is it actually being allocated to? Yeah. So if you are someone who actually has some sort of budget where your money is actually going where you want it to go and you can actually account for it, then the chances are you're doing better than so many, many, many people. There are people that just don't have a budget. There are people that try to create budgets but just don't stick to them. So if you're able to have a budget, stick to the budget so much so that you are able to account for where your money goes, you are doing better than so many people.
There's a particular there's a particular sense of peace in that last week of your of the month where yes, your money might not be up, but you know that you don't desperately, if payday comes, you're looking forward to it because obviously everyone likes to get paid, but it's not from a place of desperation.
Absolutely, that's the key word. It's not a place of if I don't get paid and I don't know what I'm going to do next. That's really,
That's
really
it.
important. Yeah.
And if that's you, my friend, you are doing very well financially. Jax, we've done two. What's another one? We've got 10 to go through.
Yeah. So number three is that you actually have a debt that's fully under control, right? So notice I didn't say you have no debt. I mean, it's great if you have no debt in place, any consumer debt, that's absolutely amazing. That's really good. That's amazing. However, the key phrase here is you have debt fully under control. So even if you do have some consumer debt, right? Let's say you've got some credit card debt or some sort overdraft and that kind of stuff, but you have it fully under control, again, chances are you're doing very well because so many people do not have debt under control. It goes hand in hand with what you're saying, Peter, for number two, because the chances are if you have debt under control, you would have had to have a budget, right? And within that budget, you are able to actually allocate some of that money towards paying down your debt. And some people are able to use debt wisely to gain things like points for flights and stuff like that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I personally am not just a huge fan of debt generally, but there are people that are very, very able to use debt wisely and have their debt fully under control. So if you are someone who can honestly say that you have debt completely under control, you know how much it is, you know the interest that you're paying, and you're able to pay it off ideally in full every month, then you're doing better than a lot of people.
I like the words you said honestly, a few seconds ago, because Jax, I was gonna ask, what's the difference between saying you have debt under full control and actually having debt fully on con in control? So, for example, you know, someone earning £2,000 a month and every month spending £1,300 a month to pay off debt, but living off 700, you know, living off beans and rice or whatever, can they say they have debt fully on control in control?
They have it under some control, but they're definitely struggling. So I wouldn't use the word fully under control. I think having debt under control fully, by my definition, is being able to continue living at a good standard of living, and being able to pay off your debt ideally in full every single month, or you're able to pay down a decent proportion with a known kind of end date for which you're going to finish paying off all the debt. So if you've got a debt that you're paying off over the next 6 months and you're able to contribute towards this debt comfortably without, you know, jeopardizing your standard of living, and at the end of the 6 months you would have finished paying off the debt, then you have it under control.
Love it. And I think it's quite important because, as you know, Jack, some of us have literally grown up with debt in families where debt is just all around us, right? So it's a normal thing for a lot of our expenses to be going towards debt. And now, even in this new age world we're in, debt is made to look even more and more attractive. So yeah, it's really important that you went through that definition as well. Cool. Okay, we've done three. What's number four?
So number four is being able to contribute at least 10% towards your retirement. Now, we talk about 10% being almost like a decent kind of benchmark to use, but I would say if you are actually getting some money towards your pension, then you're probably doing better than a lot of people, or you're just doing well full stop. Here in the UK, for employed people, if you earn over a certain amount and you are of a certain age, you are actually automatically enrolled into your company's pension scheme, for which, on average, or a minimum of 8% will be paid into your pension. So, I think that's good. I think that's great for people that are, you know, able to stay within a company pension scheme. But 10% is often a benchmark that we use to say if you're getting this amount into some sort of pension pot or an additional retirement type of savings, then you're probably doing very well and you're able to compound your returns over a very long time, such that one day you would be able to retire comfortably.
Love that. So that's at least 10% towards your retirement. If that is you are doing quite well financially. And just as you said, here in the UK, employers, for most employers contribute quite a bit to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So here in the UK, auto enrollment means your employer will contribute at least 3% and you will contribute at least 5%, generally speaking, which makes it 8%. But if you can push it up a notch to that 10%, that's probably better. But of course, you know, these are guidelines. There are things that we do need to consider. We need to consider things like age and your overall circumstances. So do not take this as I need to just contribute 10%. Whether that's too high or too low, it's just a general benchmark for the average age and the average person. However, if you have no pensions or no retirement savings whatsoever, then you probably want to put more. A good guideline that I tend to use is whatever your age is, if you divide that by two, that's the amount you probably want to use as a percentage going into your pension or some sort of retirement savings. To use an example, if you are 30 years old and you have no savings for retirement, so you're just getting started, you want to half 30, which is 15. And then, of course, that means you're going to contribute 15% towards your pension.
And that's for the rest of your working days, basically.
Until you retire, yes.
Correct. Okay, yeah. And the idea for our listeners of hopefully you'll start to realize from what Jackson said, that particular calculation, the earlier you start, the better, because you will be contribute well, from that maths, you'll be contributing less but over a longer period of time, and that will compound much more over time.
Absolutely. Time is a huge factor in the compounding growth kind of formula. It's time, it's how much you contribute, and it's the performance of your investments. But time is one of those things that we can't control. So we just start as soon as we can.
And please, listeners, we've done a lot of episodes on pensions. And it's something that we're quite excited about, because we do feel it's a very, very important product when it comes to personal finance journeys. Do check out some of our episodes on this. So episode 18, pension series, avoiding the pension nightmare. Or you can check out episode 107, Stop Pension Contributions to Cope with the Current Times, as a question. So do listen to those episodes as well, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. Pensions are, initially for young people, they don't seem like the sexiest topic when it comes to investing. But once we become more knowledgeable and we understand the tax efficiencies involved in investing through your pension, we understand that this is probably the best way to invest for your long term.
Absolutely. Cool. Okay. We are swiftly moving on to number five.
Yeah, so number five is actually having some sort of wise investment plan. And the keyword here is wise, and actually having a plan. So you find that investing has become a very hot topic over the years. You find a lot of what they call now finfluencers, Peter. There's a new terminology I came across, finfluencers, which are financial influencers on, let's say, YouTube, for example. Who may talk about different stocks that people should buy. We had the AMC frenzy, the GameStop frenzy. We had certain other types of assets like Bitcoin and a whole bunch of stuff when it comes to coins and that kind of stuff. And people listen to this and they take what we call investment advice from this, which is not what they should be doing. And sometimes they buy some of these things in the name of investing, right? That is not the game plan. That's not the game plan. The game plan is to actually have a well thought out investment plan that has wisdom attached to it, which means you are putting your money towards something that has a history of going up in value. It's assets that have proven their worth over years, like stocks, shares, bonds, commodities like gold, alternative assets, etc. And actually making sure that your plan, your investment plan, actually meets your objectives, your time frames and deadlines, as well as your ability and willingness to take risk. That's what an investment plan consists of, is about optimizing that and making sure that you ideally have it written down and you stick to it over the long term. It doesn't have to be rigid, it can be flexible, but you'd be so surprised how many people are now putting money into stocks and stuff like that without actually having any sort of financial plan, sorry, investment plan in place.
No, I love that. I love that. And I'm gonna build onto that for number six, actually. Which is a sixth sign that you've are doing well financially, is that you have sought out a regulated financial advisor. Which clearly means you are at some stage where you've got a wise investment plan, which Jax has mentioned, but there's other things that you're trying to juggle around and understand more. It obviously clearly shows that you've got a decent amount of assets as well, whether it's cash or whatever it is, and you want to understand how can you make best use of it. Hence you wanting to see a financial advisor who would is supposed to help you with that. So I think, yeah, if you have sought out a financial advisor, it's a great thing, and it's a really good sign that you are doing well financially.
Absolutely, absolutely. I say, as you continue your wealth journey, you want to build a team of people that help you on that journey, ideally of regulated individuals and professionals. And financial advisors definitely know how to add value to you if you get the right one, ideally one with a heart of an educator and one potentially who's also fee-based, for example, so that you're not spending way too much on financial advisory. Yeah, and I will even add to that, get yourself other professionals like tax advisors, accountants, and that kind of stuff too.
And they make up the team as well. And for our listeners as well, if you want to know a bit more, what if you're thinking, oh, should I get a financial advisor? earn much, or I don't have much, etc. Is it the time right to get one? Or what is, how much should I be earning before I get one as well? Definitely check out episode 46, called Should I Get a Financial Advisor? We've got two episodes on that actually, so do definitely check that out. But just as a very ballpark figure, Jax, do you have any, I guess, thoughts on, when's the right time to go see a financial advisor, purely from a monetary income perspective?
Yeah, in terms of like your assets and and that kind of stuff, the value of those things, it can differentiate. I personally say usually around 250,000, so 250K dollars or pounds or whatever your currency is, if it's a developed currency, that probably is a signal to speak to a financial advisor. Some investment managers are really only willing really happy to manage your assets if it's half a mil, so 500,000. But to be fair, I would say as soon as you start having assets over 100,000 pounds, you can seek out a financial advisor, but for different purposes. It can be a fee-only financial advisor for which you just do one consultation with, and then that's it. You don't need to actually hand over your assets for them to manage. And so that's from a assets or net worth perspective. But also, if you are a high rate taxpayer, or if you are an additional rate taxpayer. Let's say you earn over 100,000 pounds a year. Chances are you probably want to speak to, again, a financial advisor who can advise us the best ways to pay less tax. Here in the UK, as soon as you start earning over 100,000 pounds, you are taxed so heavily. But there are very intelligent and wise ways to pay less tax. For example, putting money into a pension, which a financial advisor can help you with.
Love it, love it, love it. No, thank you for that, Jax. Okay, we've done number six. What's number seven?
So number seven would be to have a healthy credit score. So when we
Big,
talk about
big,
credit
big.
scores, yeah, having a and if in fact if for someone who consistently or regularly checks their credit score and credit file, then you're doing pretty well, right? So it's usually quite self-explanatory to know whether you're doing well with your credit score and that kind of stuff, and you're checking it. So here in the UK, we tend to use a few different providers. I use two different providers because they use two different type of strategies of actually checking your credit score. For example, I use Experian and a Credit Karma. There are different ones out there. But yes, if you're checking your credit score and it's remained within the good to excellent range, then you're probably okay.
Yeah, shout out Credit Karma. It's not a recommendation, but I use them and their interface is very good. They give regular updates if there's any alerts on your credit report. If anyone's done a soft search or a hard search on you and you're not aware, you'll find out pretty immediately. So yeah, definitely a good tool to use as well. And again, Jax, I guess for the novice also, why is it actually, in terms of having a credit score, what can that mean more for you?
Yeah. So having a good credit score and a healthy credit file, what that allows you to do is it allows you to borrow money from different providers who you basically you're proving to them through your credit score and credit file that you are credit worthy, which means you're worthy for them to borrow money to you and you're not that risky. So the better your credit score and credit file, also when you do borrow some money, whether it's for a car, whether it's for a home or whatever, they don't charge you excessive interest rates. The lower your credit score, the higher the interest they're going to charge because they perceive you as higher risk. So yes, that's the reason why we do know that we live in a world where many things are financed through debt. So ideally, you want that cost of debt to be as cheap as possible, and you do that by proving your creditworthiness through your credit file and credit score.
Love it, love it, love it. No, thank you for that, bro. I'm sure we've done episodes where we've touched on credit score in further detail, but as for our long-time listeners, man, we've got over 170 episodes. So if any of you know which episode that is, you can let us know on this occasion. But now, Jack's cool. That's at number seven, having a healthy credit score. What's number eight?
Yeah, so number eight is a topic area that I think we will be going into in much more detail over the next few months, which is actually having the right protection in place. And by protection, we're talking about things such as life insurance, income protection, etc. Other ones are things like critical illness. But essentially, having the right insurances in place to protect you should the worst happen. So we talk about things like life insurance, which essentially protects your family and your potentially your dependents. If you were to pass on, then it will pay out a certain amount to the people that have been dependent on you for a long period of time, for example. And then you have things like income protection, which is more to do with you losing the ability to earn an income, right? Some people will say that's probably even worse than, and passing away. I know that sounds a bit off, but when you pass away, that's the end of the road for you. It's the people that are, left behind that, you kind of want to look after with giving them a gift of some sort of life insurance payout. But also, the other side is if you just happen to fall ill or something happens and you just happen to still be alive, but you just can't work and earn an income anymore. Then, that can harm your family if you're the main breadwinner. Or you can become a burden to other people as well. So having the right income protection in place protects you from this kind of situation. So absolutely, having life insurance and income protection, especially these two, are very important things to have. And if you do have these things, you've been intentional with seeking them out, then you are doing very well for yourself.
Love it, love it, love it. And Jax, I guess, is there a little bit of a note for people that might be in certain jobs as well to make sure they check a few things on this as well?
Well, absolutely. If you are employed, chances are you may and probably will have life insurance through your company. The key thing is you want to make sure that the life insurance that you have actually makes sense for what you want to leave behind should the worst happen. You also want to go in there and fill out who the beneficiaries actually are, right? So, if you're getting a certain amount, you might say, I want half of it to go to my partner and some of it to go to my children. If you're not married, then who do you want it to go to? Do you want to go to your siblings? Very, very important to note these things down. So, if you're someone who is very intentional about this and has, looked into this in more detail and you've done your what we call your expression of wishes and that kind of stuff, then that's really, really good. And if you are someone who is self-employed, then I think personally this is even a bigger thing, right? If you're self-employed, then you definitely don't have the benefit of your company just paying out for you. Then you probably most definitely want to have it done kind of externally, right? Independently, you just find yourself a financial advisor and get this done. So if you're self-employed and you have this, you're doing very well. It's something that people struggle to understand until the worst happens, and then we have many horror stories where people have lost their jobs and are not earning anything anymore, or they've passed on and then there's nothing left for the family, etc. Really important. And if you do a job that's quite dangerous, if you do a job that's quite dangerous and quite where you can get injured quite easily, then you definitely want to have income protection. If you just last week, Peter, you would know that I had a bit of a back injury, right? And luckily for me, I can work from home, so I was able to work from home. But let's just say I was a builder, I would have not been able to work for a decent period of time, right? And so what would I would have not been paid if I was a tr if I was doing a trade that requires me to work and then get paid. Income protection is there for situations like this. So if you are self-employed and you've got this in place, absolutely well done. If you are employed and you're checking to see what it actually is and you've done your expression of wishes, again, well done. You're doing very well for yourself.
For the listener that's maybe in their late teens or early 20s listening, Jax, particularly on life insurance, as you know, it's a we just said it, it's a great, it's a good sign that you're doing well financially if you have a life insurance product. For that listener who is a bit younger, at some point it'll probably be wise for them to get life insurance, right? And obviously with life insurance, particularly life insurance, the younger you are, the more cheaper it's likely to be because you're less of a risk. You're less likely to leave this planet for obvious reasons. So, what are your thoughts on the on that for the young listener thinking, okay, is this something that I should be considering and maybe when?
I would say get it. I mean, I think what I say is if you do have dependents, like children or a partner, then it's non-negotiable in my opinion, right? You definitely need it. But if you don't have these things, then I don't say it's non-negotiable, but it's beneficial for yourself for the reasons you've just stated, right? So absolutely, if you have the opportunity to get it now, and you're working, get it in place. Because yeah, once you get it, it's cheaper. They know that you're younger, so the chances are you're less risk of just passing away anytime soon. And of course, you'll be paying your premiums for a much longer period of time. But they factor this in, and they know that that works well for them as well. So for both of you, it works well, pretty cheap, and definitely, yeah, definitely get it done.
And I love what you said. If you have dependents, it's not really spoken. Life insurance is not really spoken about in certain. I know in our communities, Jax, it definitely wasn't spoken about at all. But if you've got dependents, man, where possible, obviously this costs money, but it's so important that that is factored into one's longer term thinking if you've got any dependents.
Yeah, and look, it's important, and that's why we say speak to the right people. There are different types of insurances, and some are much cheaper than others, right? So, you don't have to get whole of life insurance. I'm not usually a huge fan of that. For example, it's usually very expensive, because they know that it's going to cash out at some point. But term insurance, and also something called decrease in term insurance, are usually very cheap. So, absolutely, you definitely want to look at potentially getting these in place.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Okay, brilliant. Really good. And as you said, yeah, at some point we're gonna do a more detailed episode on protection in general as well, man, because yeah, that's a big one. Okay, so we've done eight so far. We've got two more signs to go. What's the next one?
So the next one is one that some people may not be expecting, but again, we're talking about 10 signs that you're actually doing well financially, is you continue to develop yourself, right? So you've made self-development a priority in your life. And we don't say that, it's not cliche, it's not something we're just saying for feel good factor. This is truth. This is mechanical. If you continue to develop yourself, chances are you'll be able to earn a higher income. And we know the formula for building wealth is to earn more than what you spend and to use the difference to invest wisely in assets over a long period of time, right? A big part of that formula is your earnings potential. And your earnings potential is very much tied to your ability to provide more value towards the marketplace. So if you are someone who's continued developing yourself, you'll continue to learn new skills, learn your soft skills, learn skills that just make you even a better person to be around, right? These things, add value to you and add value to other people. And there is often a financial return attached to that as well.
Love it, love it, love it. So for our listeners, if I was to ask you the question, what was the last course you was on, or what was the last time you sought to develop yourself, whether it's reading a book, watching a YouTube video, etc., and you're struggling to answer, we need to get back onto that, man. And if you can answer very easily, as we've just said, man, that's a sign, a very good sign that you are doing well financially, because there is, as Jack said, a very strong correlation to one's earning potential, man.
Absolutely, absolutely.
No, I love it, love it, love it. Okay, gonna create a bit of suspense on the last and final one, Jax. And by that, I just mean I'm gonna take a bit of a breather and a break to give a shout out to where we are getting new listeners from. And this area is a city in Canada called Saskatoon. Saskatoon, Jax.
Oh gosh, the amount of times, every time you're about to come up with a name, I'm just like, gosh, I hope the listener does not feel offended by the way you butcher their names.
We've actually had a big influx from them actually in the last few days, actually. So a massive shout out. Like a
Amazing,
couple
man.
hundred listeners over there.
Amazing, 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 amazing. Welcome to the World Finance Podcast. I mean, I've been to podcast. I've been to podcast. I've been to Canada once. I was in Toronto. I was there the year the Raptors actually won the NBA. I believe that's what it's called. I'm not a basketball fan, but I really enjoyed the environment there. Anyway, welcome to the World Finance Podcast. You are here with myself, Jax, and the co-host, Peter. On this podcast, we talk about all things finance and all things related to finance. If you want to know more about what we do, because World Finance, based in the UK, is more than just a podcast, we are servants of the community. You can head over to www.worldfinance.co.uk. That's www.worldfinance.co.uk. Sign up to our mailing list so you're kept up to date with all the things that we are doing. If you want to engage with us on socials, we are predominantly on Instagram and LinkedIn. So if you search for Woke Finance Team on Instagram, you will find us. And if you search for Woke Finance on LinkedIn, you will find us there as well. But I hope you guys are really enjoying the episodes, and I hope you guys are really gaining tons of value.
Come on, come on. A massive shout out to our listeners over there in Canada and, of course, all over the world. Now, Jax, we're gonna go to the final sign that one is doing well financially.
I think the final one is almost like the exclamation mark. And anyone that tells me that they have this or are doing this has clearly showed me that they are either doing very well financially now or they will be doing financially well in the future. And that is, they actually have a real financial plan. They have a financial plan that they track and also review on a consistent basis. So it's very much similar to what you mentioned for number two, which is having a budget and not living paycheck to paycheck. But this goes a bit beyond that. This goes towards looking at your short-term goals, your medium-term goals, your long-term goals, and making sure all of these things are factored into one document called a financial plan. In fact, it is inside of a financial plan that you find the investment plan, which is one of the areas that we spoke about today. Someone who actually has a wise investment plan is probably doing very well. But an investment plan is actually just one segment of a full financial plan. Same way someone who has life insurance and income protection insurance and that kind of stuff, someone who's checking their credit scores, all these things are all underneath the umbrella of having a financial plan. And again, it's not just about having it, it's about being able to stick to it. To have it strong enough that it's not too easy to change around, but it's also quite flexible. But the key words I used earlier was you track your financial plan, you're able to track your expenditure, you track your net worth, and you review it to see where you are and whether it still matches and you're still doing the right things to achieve your short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals.
I love that. I really do. And it's having a financial plan. It's a bigger thing than it. I mean, you can make it very simple, obviously, but I think actually using it and actually reviewing it. It's like when Jax, when you do goals in general for the new year, right? Some people might do in December, some people might do in January, but then it's very easy to not actually go back to it and review it and stuff like that. So actually following a financial plan that you've put together is really, really almost, I'll say, exciting, because it is nice to just go over things and see where you're not doing so well, where you are doing well, looking at the longer term goals and all of that stuff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, reviewing it is looking at whether your circumstances have changed because, as you said, a financial plan is flexible. Maybe the time that you made it, whether it's by yourself, whether you've got a partner, you've done it with your partner, maybe life has changed. Maybe there's been an introduction of a newborn baby, a new child. Maybe inside of your will, you've changed who you want to leave things to.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Right, so it's not something that we just set it and forget it. It's something that we create. It is almost our sat nav towards our destination, and we're able to review it on a consistent basis and adjust it and keep it flexible for the long term. But it really helps us. It really guides us, and keeps us accountable for our long term goals.
I love that. I love that. I love that, man. Jax, man, 10 signs. We've just gone through 10 signs, man. My final question actually is for the listener who maybe doesn't have all 10 of these signs, but has one or two. I will definitely say they are still on track and they're doing well. For the listener that doesn't have none of this and is thinking, gosh, what's our words of yeah, what's our words to them, man?
I'll start with number one. I mean, I think the key thing is, look, these are 10 signs that you're doing very well. It's not you have to have all of 10 to be
That's
doing
it.
very well. I think that's the key thing to note down. The key thing is to go through the 10 we've discussed, listen to the podcast again, ask yourself, do you have these things in place? If you don't have any in place, then at least you've got some sort of guidance and you can actually start to look into these things in more detail, right? Start with the simple ones, start off with trying to, have like a fully funded emergency fund. I think, thinking about developing yourself is definitely one. There's some that are much easier to tick off, right? It's much easier to implement straight away. Okay. I think that's what you can start doing. Some of these things are not that difficult. It's more about the intentionality of actually doing it in the first place. So yeah, you've heard us speak about it. I'm sure some of the listeners have heard this and they're quite surprised that these things are actually very doable, right? And when we talk about 10 things or 10 signs that you're doing well financially, some people may think, hey, we're going to talk about someone who's got, I don't know, like £1 million in a bank, or someone who owns two cars or has three properties for rentals. Well, absolutely not. Those are not the signs that you're doing financially well. In fact, the person who's got two cars might be swimming in absolute debt,
Terrible.
right? That's the person who's got £1 million is only one bad decision away from financial calamity. So it's not about those things. It's about really doing the simple things and doing the simple things well, and starting the journey. And the last one I think is extremely important, which is really starting to think about having a financial plan. You can learn how to create one yourself, some sort of strategy. If you have a bit of savings, you can actually, like we've been saying through this podcast, you can actually speak to a financial advisor, also in the UK called financial planners, right? Who can actually sit you down and actually go through a full financial plan with you. Or you can get a coach as well. So absolutely, you can get started. It's not too difficult, as you can probably tell, but the key thing is to get started and be intentional with it.
Love that, love that, love that, love that, love that. Nah, man, that's very encouraging. And Jack's for the person that says, oh, all these 10 signs, I'm doing them already. Well, guess what? There's more signs out there. Life is tough. There's more stuff out there. So don't feel too arrogant right there. No, I'm
Well,
only kidding.
I
Somewhat.
was gonna say these are 10 signs you're doing well financially. These are not 10 signs you're doing very well financially. So,
Exactly. And then after that, it's very, very well.
it's
So
very, very, very well.
don't
So,
get ahead of yourself, listener, if you're thinking you're too cool in the car. I just
I was gonna say, Pierre, just to add to that,
yeah, because
if you have ticked all 10 boxes, I think it is okay to give yourself a bit of a tap, a bit of a
100.
pat on the back. Absolutely, you're on the right track. But the key thing is you're on a track, right? So stick on it, continue it, and then develop it from there.
That's it, man. Wherever you are on this journey, man. So now, hopefully, that's been a really good discussion, Jax, man. Hopefully, really useful for our listeners, man. Do continue to support us. Check us out. We have recently just put up all of our episodes on YouTube. It's completely fresh there, so feel free to tune in to Woke Finance on YouTube and get our views up and things. And yeah, listen in, man. Wherever you are in the world, and remember all,
Day.
stay woke.